I'm Julie Kraftchick.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is The Psychology of Relationships. What if everything you thought was too late in love wasn't late at all? What if your timeline wasn't behind? It was right on time. We're flipping the script on one of the biggest cultural myths in dating, that love has an expiration date. For decades, people have internalized the idea that if you don't lock it down before 30, you've somehow missed your chance. But real psychology tells a different story, one where time pressure is often the very thing that distorts our choices, not defines our opportunities. In this episode, we're joined by the brilliant and beloved Mei Li, former CNN journalist and anchor, powerhouse storyteller, and now engaged for the very first time at age 57. Her story isn't just inspirational. It's a masterclass in how releasing societal timelines can change your entire relational trajectory. When this episode was recorded, Mei had just recently got engaged, but now she's very much in wedding planning mode. Many people feel their dating window is narrowing. But studies show that a future positive perspective, now believing your best experiences are still ahead, actually increases confidence, self-worth, and attraction. Mei embodies that mindset. Every detour in her past created the conditions for the right relationship to emerge now. We talk about chrononormativity, the psychological concept that society imposes proper timelines for adulthood milestones. When people internalize these norms, they experience deadline pressure, which research shows can lead to rushed decisions, reduced satisfaction, and settling for partners who fit the timeline rather than the person. Mei's life is the counter-narrative. When you take away the artificial countdown clock, you give yourself space to choose with clarity, agency, and authenticity. Ultimately, this conversation is a reminder. Age doesn't limit your chance at love, but outdated timelines do. And when you release them, like Mei did, you make room for a relationship that's aligned, healthy, and right on time. Remember to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen and leave us a rating and review, especially with a comment about what you learned from this episode. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that just might change the way you show up for love. Enjoy! Mei, lovely Mei, the last time we spoke, we talked about having it all. Can you have it all? But can you have it all at the same time, or can you not have it all at the same time? We had a really great discussion around that.
We did.
And shortly after, you started dating someone, and now he is your fiancé. Congratulations are in order, first of all.
And I blame all of you. No, I'm just kidding. You do own part of this. And may I remind you and your listeners that it's because of that show where we're talking about can you have it all and, you know, timing and all of that. It made me very curious about trying to go online to see what was going on, especially during COVID. Mm-hmm. And so I did with a very cynical attitude.
Not surprised.
Yeah, as a journalist, of course, I had my doubts. But it happened. I met the guy, and now we're engaged. Go figure, lady.
Look at this tone. Look at this tone. She's like, so I went shopping, and I found this shirt, and I was like, yeah, I'll take it. No, but
yeah.
Well, I've actually met him, I guess it was like over a year and a half ago or maybe 2 years ago, but he's lovely.
I've been close twice before in my, you know, adulthood.
Yeah.
Those did not work out. We didn't make it there, thank God. And I really mean that. And then, yeah, now at 57, I am engaged for the first time.
So take us back, because I mean, you alluded to it. You got online to start to scope it out.
Yeah.
Take us back to single Mei. How did you two meet?
There's been a lot of single Mei in my life.
Well, yeah, in the recent years, yes.
So really, you know, I was at a point in my life where like a lot of more mature women who have successful career, I've lived all over the world because of my career and I made my choices, right? And so when we always go back to that question, can women have it all? We can, but oftentimes not all at once. And so we are up against sometimes making choices, right?
Yeah.
So I chose during my lifetime very openly and wisely, not always, but, you know, deliberately the course of my life to a certain extent. So I was at a point where I said, well, you know what? I've been single for a while and I've been good. Everything's been okay. And so I think it was more of curiosity about what was going on in the climate of what was going on because of COVID. I would be lying if I said I wasn't somewhat open-minded too, though. Mm-hmm. Even though I was cynical, I wanted to stay open-minded because I wanted to see, could it possibly happen now? Because as we know, oftentimes life is about timing. And so this is the perfect example of timing, because I think he was at a point in his life where he wanted to meet somebody and I was open to it and experimenting. And we met each other within the first week of both of us joining OkCupid.
Wow. Okay. So this was on OkCupid. Love it.
This was on OkCupid because UA had shared some data points with me that OkCupid during COVID had gone up something like 230% in terms of activity.
Yeah. Something ridiculous.
And it was because OkCupid requires a little bit more information. You have to fill out more stuff in your profile and you can ask a bunch of questions if you choose. And so that told me that people who were joining OkCupid at the time of COVID, they were more serious perhaps about meeting somebody and getting to know somebody, learning more about somebody before they even connected. And so that drew me in a little bit, saying, okay, there's a little bit more quality control that you can manipulate a little bit before you even connect with somebody. That's how it happened. And within the first week, he reached out to me.
Okay.
And it was very clear he had read my profile. It was very clear he had read all of my answers.
How so?
Because he was in his first message to me, he was referring to things I said in my profile. Very specific details. And so that already told me, okay, this is a guy who's serious. He's not just looking at photos and being like, hi, you know.
Which many people do.
Exactly. Hey, right? I mean, that kind of thing. So it was very clear that it was thoughtful about it.
Had you been on dating apps before, like while you were single? Were you used, like, how was this different?
Is the sky blue, Julie? Come on. No, I mean, look, a lot of us in this day and age, dating apps are the way to try to meet people, right?
Yeah.
Because we're all so busy, but also it's complicated.
Yeah.
So yes, I had been on and off dating apps for years. Mm-hmm. And I had been successful in the past. You know, I had some longer term relationships from meeting somebody from a dating app. But every time I would go on a dating app and it just didn't work out or whatever, I'd be like, I'm never doing this again. I swear I will never go on a dating app again. And so if I had a dollar for every time I said that, I'd probably
you'd be fucking rich.
I mean, I feel like it sounds so obvious to be on dating apps, but we actually heard a lot of people in COVID being their first time. That's why I asked. Like, it is crazy. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. But
it was a little different for you because you wanted to go on OkCupid out of curiosity.
Yeah.
How did you do your profile differently? Or did you do it differently than previous profiles?
You know what? I think no. Whenever I would do my profiles for, you know, any dating app, because I'm a journalist, you know, I mean, I'm a good writer, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I always approached it very honestly and very sincerely. But I also wanted to project the kind of person I am, which is not some docile, timid female, right? Looking for a husband. I really wanted people to know who I truly am. So I would talk about my travels. I would talk about having lived overseas. I wouldn't say I was a journalist because I didn't want people to start Googling me and finding me because they would.
Right.
So I had to be somewhat careful about my identity. As one girlfriend said to me, why is it, May, that you would always meet really stellar people online, upstanding guys who had a decent career and, you know, they were successful. And she's like, and I always get these like starving artist types, you know? And I said to her, you know, I really think it's because I'm projecting through the profile a level of confidence and somebody who's somewhat worldly and who kind of projects the character of, I kind of know what I want. And so I know that was part of why, his name is Andre, was attracted to my profile initially. He liked what I was saying. He liked the honesty. He liked the confidence that he could feel. But in COVID, I also wanted to say and said in my profile, we're living through very interesting times. It's crazy. And there's a lot of self-reflection going on.
Right.
And so I remember saying that about myself, saying this is giving me time to reflect on a lot of things and prioritize and weed out the unnecessary things or to such distractions. So I was equating what was going on at the time with how I was feeling too.
So we hear you. You're coming from a place of curiosity, kind of shed light into where you were at that moment.
Yeah.
Dating in your 50s. We like to call it like your dating why. Like, what's the reason that you're even dating in the first place? Like, what was your mentality this time around dating in your 50s?
That's a great question because, again, I mean, some people might be thinking, yeah, why would she need to date if she's saying that her life was so good and, you know, there was nothing that was empty or missing? And I truly felt that way. So don't think I'm feeding you guys a bunch of bullshit. But I think it was a combination of COVID where we all just stopped and we started really thinking about what's really important to me? What do I value? What's the meaning of life almost? We were asking ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, one of the most important aspects of life at this stage of my life now is connection, mm-hmm. right? It's about relationships. And I don't mean sexual relationships, boyfriend, girlfriend. I mean relationships, friendships, family, all of those things that really matter. And that's a core value for me.
Yeah.
Is that I need to have true relationships in my life to make me feel fulfilled. That's why I love teaching, because I have a connection with my students and I feel like we're giving each other some sort of value. So I think in my 50s, it was the combination of really knowing who I am, finally, also not giving a fuck about what other people think about me. And that's also the beauty of getting older, right? You really don't give a shit about if they're going to judge you. I could give a rat's ass. And so when you reach that point in your life, it really opens you up to more possibilities.
Yeah.
Because nothing's holding you back in terms of, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that because they're going to think badly of me, or, oh, I wonder what I look like, or, oh, yeah, look, I went gray during COVID. Right? I was just like, I cannot color my hair anymore. This is ridiculous. And so now I have these gray streaks and I'm like so psyched because I'm saving so much money.
And chemicals.
And chemicals, exactly. It was the combination of all of that, Julie. I really think that that's why I think timing for me, that it had to take me being in my 50s to really be open to a solid, meaningful relationship that was good for me.
And you're at a point where you're happy single.
Yes.
I think that is key. So important to highlight is I'm perfectly happy being on my own, curious to see if I can find a connection with someone, but if not, fine. Yes. This is a great life.
Right.
How do you think your dating why has changed throughout the decades? Like, take us back to your 40s. Was your dating why differently?
Well, in my 40s, when I was just turning 40, that's when I almost got engaged for the second time. And I know that at that period of my life, because I was about to turn 40, I was panicked. In that stage where you're like, man, if I don't do this now, because the biological
now or never. I think a lot of people feel that way for sure. Yeah. I feel that way. It's a weird arbitrary cutoff, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. And I think, again, it's a combination of societal guidelines, but also realistically for women, it's the biological clock too, right? So when you're hitting 40, again, doctors are saying, and you know, obviously the data shows that it's kind of a cliff that you drop off of. But clearly we've seen women over 40 have children too. So it's not impossible. But I think all of that pressure and all of these rules about age, especially with women, really put a lot of pressure on us. And so, I almost got engaged to a guy that was bad news. I saw so many red flags throughout the time when we were dating and I was going to go through it with him anyway.
Yeah.
And I look back on that. I'm like, crazy.
Yeah. Like, what the hell were you thinking? Right?
You wanted this so badly that you were willing to overlook all of this shit. So that's how my 40s started.
In the 30s, you're dating why?
again, 30s, I was flying high career-wise, and most of my 30s was spent overseas working for various networks, including CNN in Tokyo and Hong Kong. So I was career woman, totally focused, totally driven. So if a guy came into my life, and they did, they had to take it or leave it in terms of like what I was doing with my career. So I was a bit rigid. I will say I was a bit more rigid in terms of really just, it was all about my career. And sure, the relationship, that was nice.
It wasn't the priority.
But if it didn't work, oh my gosh, I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you a horrible story. And if he's listening, don't worry, I'm not going to use a name. I was dating a guy in Tokyo. He was American, expat, super nice guy, you know, nothing wrong with them. We were dating for about 2 years. But I didn't feel it. I kind of knew that he wasn't the one. I think he thought I was the one. Then I got a promotion to become the anchor of CNN out of Hong Kong. This is when I was still in Tokyo. And so he was prepared to move for me to Hong Kong from Tokyo. And we were sitting on my couch as the movers had come and taken almost everything out of my apartment. And I was like, no, we're done. And I broke up with him and then got on the plane.
Shit.
Damn.
And I mean, seriously, ladies, it was bad. That was not my finest moment.
Damn.
And so, but that's how I was at that time. And so I know he hated me for a long time. He might still hate me. Who knows? But yeah, that was kind of an unforgivable move on my part.
Yeah, because it wasn't a priority for you.
Yeah.
In your 30s. Your priority was your career. And we hear this a lot.
It was. And you know, here's the thing. I think also it was one of those things, even when I was younger, I think it was instilled in me that marriage was forever, right? Because I come from a very traditional family background, right? My parents are Korean immigrants. They stayed married to the day my father died, you know, tragically. And so I grew up with that notion of, yeah, if you get married, you stay married. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but that's just the way I was brought up.
Right.
So I know that my psyche was like, yeah, you know, marriage, it's serious. And so I'm not going to do it unless it feels right and it's the right person. Now, granted, when I was about to turn 40, I was about to make that huge mistake. But I think that affected me all along the way with relationships where I thought, if I don't feel this 100%, I'm not going to do it.
I mean, that makes total sense. Like, I definitely can hear why you felt the way that you did with that. Like, it's funny that in retrospect, you can see this all so clearly. But when you're in it, it's hard to know what the right decisions are.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know you're like, oh, I was terrible to that guy. But it's like in that moment, you were just trying to figure it out also. And even like the one in your 40s, it's really interesting to hear, like, I felt that pressure and I would have regretted it.
Yeah.
So take us current day, like when you met your now fiance, how did this feel different? Like, how did you change your mentality and know that this one was a keeper?
Yeah. So I felt something very early on. And when I mean very early on, I mean when we first started messaging each other on the app before we even had a phone conversation. Because when he wrote me, clearly I saw that he was taking care in terms of writing back to me and referring to things that he read about me. So I could tell he was already a thoughtful guy. And then I read his profile and saw that, you know, he was a beautiful writer as well, but he was also being very authentic and honest in his profile. And so I was like, huh, this seems like an unusual, and also he's from Europe. And so for me, I like the idea that somebody has a more worldly, international view of the world. So that sort of intrigued me as well. But once we started communicating, I felt like, wow, okay, this seems more real. And also because he's 1 year older than me, there's a level of maturity and sort of advanced thinking and sort of life experiences that we had both been through. And so that kind of made an easier connection. But he definitely expressed himself much earlier on than I did. And when I say that, he used the L word much earlier on than I did. And when he said it, I was like, whoa, Nelly, whoa, hold your horses. You
know? What was your reaction?
Wait, when did he say this too? I want reaction and when it was.
Yeah, it was like less than 3 months in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I didn't freak out, at least overtly. Internally, I was like, whoa, this guy likes to move fast. But I could tell he really meant it. He wasn't just saying it for the sake of saying it. I could tell he really meant it. It just took me a little bit longer to get to the point where I wanted to admit it. And I think that's my stubborn side, but that's also my protective side.
Right.
We all have our armor that we put on, right? Because we've all been hurt and we've all been scarred. So I know that I was holding back a little bit more. But here's the funniest part. So because my mom is still a traditional Korean woman.
And how old is she?
She's 87.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't tell her that I was dating anyone for 6 months because, you know, with Asian parents, especially, you know, once you tell them something, they will not leave you alone, right? They'll ask a jillion, kajillion questions all the time. And they're very judgy. I don't want to generalize, they can be. And my mom is.
Yes.
And so I didn't want to tell her about this until I knew for sure.
It's funny, though, even in your 50s, you feel that way.
Oh, no.
She's 87.
It never ends.
She's still like, oh, my single daughter, yeah. You know, my single daughter. Who's she dating now?
Right.
Exactly.
Never ends.
So I couldn't do it until I knew I was ready. And then this is the best part. I put together a PowerPoint presentation.
What?
So wild to me.
Wait,
although I'm going to try that.
What was on this PowerPoint?
Okay.
This is amazing.
Can you share your screen with us?
I know.
Can you present to us?
Oh my God, you guys. Okay, so I put so much thought into this. I put a PowerPoint presentation with photos and a story and graphic. And no, seriously, telling the story of how we met and like what who he is and like all the nice things he's done for me.
Oh.
And
oh
this
God.
And that, literally, it was a PowerPoint presentation. Because this is why I did it. If I just told my mom verbally, she kind of wouldn't absorb all of it. And she just would like inundate me with a billion questions, like I was saying. So I wanted to present it in a formal like presentation like that so that it would answer all the questions that I knew she would ask. And I was preempting that basically. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was just getting it out there. So she just had a visual aid, an explanation in simple terms so that she got the story and then she can, you know, ask me questions. That's how I told her.
Did you include testimonials, maybe like a 5-star review from you? A credit score.
Oh, my God. That's exactly. Incredible.
Ratings.
But okay, so what is interesting is that he said, I love you pretty early on.
Yeah.
And it took you a few more months to come around and to present him to your mom. But you two had a discrepancy in terms of your views on marriage. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So he's been married before. And so he's kind of like, oh, I can take it or leave it. Right? As a lot of people tend to be if they've been married before. Some people want to get married, you know, again, over and over again. But with him, he's like, yeah, I don't need to get married again. And so that was a point of contention, I have to say, you know, for a while, because I would have these conversations with him saying, I understand your viewpoint because you were hurt. And it was a bad divorce, you know, all that. And so I said, I get it. But I said, but don't impose your feelings and your view on marriage on me because I haven't done it. Mm-hmm. And so that's not fair, right? So you should understand also where I'm coming from. So we had to have these discussions along the way about, you know, where we stand. And what I was trying to do is try to have him understand where I'm coming from. He didn't have to completely accept everything I was saying.
Right.
But I also didn't want him to be so rigid saying, because at one point he said, oh, you know, this is what society imposes on everyone, you know, just because like, you know, you're supposed to get married. Everybody gets married. I go, whoa. I said, that is a sweeping generality. You need to take that back. Everyone doesn't do it because they're feeling the pressure of getting married.
Right.
People get married because they want to, right? And it's a declaration of their love and their commitment to each other. And that's what I tried to explain to him. I said, listen, to me, it's a commitment that we're making to each other, but also it is a public declaration. And that is meaningful. That is meaningful to me. And so that's when he finally, I think, got it. And he said, okay. And that he wanted to surprise me on my birthday, which was at the end of March, to propose, but I blew it. I blew the proposal, ladies. We got into an argument over this very topic around Valentine's Day.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Look, Valentine's Day is meaningless to me. I think it's just a made up, you know, holiday. But something triggered. And so we got into an argument about engagement and marriage again. And I was just like really pissed. And he's like, okay, well, I guess I have to tell you, I was going to surprise you and propose to you on your birthday. And I'm like, no, sorry.
So he had come around at this point already.
He had come around.
I feel like you and UA definitely are... have parallel lives in so many ways.
I mean, or like, I think like so many of us are in this boat where you have to, because of what your partner wants, it challenges you on why you want these things.
Totally.
I've been challenged with this almost every day. Like, why is it that I want marriage? I think I want it. And you're right. You can't impose someone else's views on marriage on yourself and vice versa.
Right.
So that does come with friction.
Yes.
But it is interesting to me that after all those years of almost getting engaged and dodging those bullets and being happy on your own, that marriage is still important to you. I'm very curious to know, why is it still important to you other than the declaration of love? But what is it at the core?
I think at the core is really the value that I put into commitment. Mm. And so when I ask myself, what does that mean and why is that so important? I look at how I look at other people and other relationships and just general behavior that I expect from others and expect from myself. And what are those values? It's commitment. It's loyalty. You can ask my friends what kind of friend I am. I'm really loyal and respect for one another. And so, and that communication that I need from other people. And so I think those are all core values that are so important to me. So if I'm in a relationship, those are things I really want. And to me, if that commitment has to come in the form of, engagement or something that, again, seals the deal, right? Because he was arguing for a long time. It's like, I'm committed to you.
Yeah.
You're the one, you know, I'm going to be with you for the rest of my life.
Right.
And so, and I don't doubt him. I didn't doubt him for a minute, but I think I still have this traditional side of me. And again, maybe it's society, maybe it's the programming to a certain extent. So I'm not going to act like, oh yeah, yeah, no, I'm not falling for the programming. It's part of that. For sure. But it is so interesting to see how people react, right? To when you say you're engaged. It's a completely new level of reaction. And the way they view you and your relationship, it changes.
It's taken seriously.
Yes. It's taken more seriously. And what's the second question people always ask after you say you're engaged? Have you set a date?
Right.
It's like they just want you to like all of a sudden speed into this, you know? And so here's where I'm a little bit unusual. Engagement was actually more important to me. Really?
Well, it's the path forward.
It is, but it's that public declaration and that commitment that you have made.
Mm. It's a symbolism.
So one thing like I've definitely been here recently is that like my partner and I are on the same page of like wanting marriage and to move forward, but we were on different paces. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, a similar story to you that he was kind of like the one early on that was moving faster.
Yeah.
And then somehow I became the one that like wanted things to move.
Trying to push it.
Faster. Yeah. And he was a little behind me. Our therapist said his heart was with me, but his head was five steps behind.
So, that's great.
So I guess my question for you is like, how were you able to work through this pace discrepancy? I know yours was a little more than that entirely is like getting on the same page of what you want in the first place, but then how to actually get it in motion.
Honestly, Julie, I think it's a work in progress. Because you think about it, you bring two human beings, individual human beings together, right? Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to what? Everything's supposed to be in sync all the time?
Right. It's not realistic.
No fucking way. That's impossible. So here's what's different about this relationship compared to any other I've had. I've never had such an open, communicative relationship before.
Yes.
Right. I've had good relationships with decent communication.
Right.
This one, it is so open and nothing is closed off. I don't ever feel like I'm walking on eggshells. Same for him. We are very, very open in terms of our communication. Because when humans get together, we're never going to always be in sync.
Right.
But what should happen though, if you have the open communication, then at least you can express, hey, dude, you're not in sync with me. What's going on? Let's talk about this. And that's what happened in this right. case with the engagement and the commitment.
Right.
He was telling me his story. I was sharing my story.
Yeah.
We obviously weren't in sync, but we kept talking about it, mm-hmm. right? And that's when we were able to grow closer and at least come to this point where we agreed. Right.
Yeah.
Now, moving forward, who knows? I mean, we're not talking about setting a date or anything that all these other people keep asking me about. I swear to God, I'm like, wait, I don't. And I feel kind of weird. I mean, you guys tell me what you think.
Wait, how long have you been engaged?
Like since the end of March.
And then if we're not real time, it's like a month later, basically.
Yeah, a month later. Yeah.
That's exactly it. It's like people always want to know what's next, what's next.
Yeah.
Like that's when your relationship is progressing. But I'm with yeah. you. I'm kind of like the engagement is almost enough just to that symbolism of commitment and love and getting rid of the boyfriend title. I know you also have an issue with the boyfriend title.
I hate
tell us about that
word. I hate the word boyfriend. I mean,
so I'm juvenile.
I'm 57 and I'm like, this right. is my boyfriend. I mean, let's come up with a better term. Yeah. And then I say partner. But if he's not with me and I tell somebody, oh, my partner, a lot of people assume I'm gay, right?
Right. Yep.
That's usually the term that's used. So
I get that a lot.
Why can't we come up with a better term? But anyway, so now when I say fiance, it's weird to me too, actually, because I'm not used to it, but at least it's a different term. But yeah, so I feel pressure from people about, you know, okay, what's next? And I'm like, well, God, can you just give me a second to just enjoy the fact that I just got engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, we haven't even gotten the ring yet because the ring, I had told him early on, I just gave him a warning and I wanted to give him a chance to, you know, understand like where I'm coming from. I said, if we ever get engaged, don't go buy me a diamond ring because I knew that my mother passing down rings to me, it was like a waste of money for him to go buy a diamond.
Yeah.
And so we're using a ring that my mother gave to me. And I'm having it redesigned and reset. So just waiting for that right now. It should be coming back in like a week, maybe. Yeah. So everything about this is sort of atypical. No real surprise for me. But
no.
If you had asked my friends in childhood, would you have ever guessed that May would never be married at the age of 57? They would be like, no fucking way. Right? Because, you know, I was this shy, traditional girl.
I want to dive into this even more. But before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners.
Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every wait. What did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction. If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/PORshow for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/PORshow.
I do feel like you kind of touched on this earlier. It's like once there is this passing of 40, society tells you it's over, which is not true, clearly.
Clearly not.
People meet at all different ages, but for whatever reason, that is the narrative
yes.
that is told, especially in today's world where people are coming in and out of the dating pool with divorces. Like, it's not true whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, how did you kind of get over this? Like, what was reactions from friends and family? Like, how did you change that narrative for yourself, but also for others?
Well, I think I've kind of lived my life, especially into my 40s and then obviously into my 50s, embracing that idea that we're getting better because I actually was getting better and I felt it. I felt it physically. I felt it mentally, certainly. I think I have been living this life for the past decade and a half now, where I really didn't want age to define me. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel my age. I didn't look my age, and yeah. I was still thriving with my career and all these other things. So dating, yeah, I mean, it does get more challenging because of the age thing. That's why so many people lie online, yeah. right? And I never did. And so I know that that erased an entire pool of candidates out because these asshole men who are in their 50s would say their maximum age for a woman would be like 35 or something
so
like that.
Ridiculous. Yeah. So yeah. ridiculous. You know, it's like, you don't want that anyways.
No, absolutely not. But I would always think to myself, you know, when I saw these guys with that kind of tight age range, like, wow, you guys really are missing out because mm-hmm. you are now not meeting women like me and all of my other friends who are fantastic just because you are judging a woman just because of her age.
Right.
And that's unfortunate. So for me, I never wanted to restrict myself. And I certainly didn't want to project this image like, oh, I'm done. I'm over the hill. You know, I give up.
Yeah.
And women out there, please take me as an example. At 57, engaged for the first time. Yeah, it can still happen.
Yeah.
If you want it, right?
If you want it. Yeah.
I think it's good to know.
It happens at the right time. I think yeah. that's what it is. It's not yes. like, oh, later in life you can.
Right.
No, it's like it happens when it the right time is for you.
Yes.
I do want to ask you this what's next question, but without the pressure on it, because I am curious to know, now that you're engaged, you are about to merge your lives together. And my partner and I recently kind of went through this as we created a joint checking account and we're going to, like, you know, combine some of our finances. And I can tell you, it is unsexy and it is not fun. And I kept thinking, if we get married, it's like this times 100.
Oh,
we're going to
yeah.
have to be merging so much of our shit together. Isn't it easier yeah. to just, like, keep lives separate? Anyway, that's my own thing. But what are your plans, being non-traditional that you are, of merging both of your lives together?
I don't know.
She's like, don't ask me that.
That is the honest answer right now, because I can't say that I haven't thought about it. But when I think about it, I'm like, God, I have no freaking idea. Because like you said, merging two lives, especially we're both in our late 50s now. I'm 57, he's 58. Mm-hmm. So that's a big merger.
Yeah.
of lives.
Yeah.
Shift. Like, we're way past middle age. So I do think about that. And so right now, he has his house, I have my house. We're not talking about moving in together. It's kind of working right now because yeah. he spends most of his time here. I rarely go to his house because I have two dogs. It's just a pain in the ass to, like, pack him up and take him to his house. So that works. And then the other thing is that his hobby, he's a technical diver. So he has all this diving shit. And I mean, when I say a lot, he has a lot of diving shit. His entire garage looks like a technical diving shop and, like, equipment. So he said, "May, even if we wanted to move in together, we would have to get a different house because there's no way
room or space."
There's practical things like that. But yeah, you're right, Yue. I mean, it's complicated when you're merging two very full lives together. It's complicated. So I don't know the answer. And I don't think we're going to get there anytime super soon.
It's so interesting because, like, when you meet someone in your 20s or, like, right after college, like, you're basically starting your life together and growing yeah. together.
Yeah.
But challenges arise because you're growing in different directions, where when you meet someone later in life, you're more developed. You know who you are. You bring that to dating.
Yeah.
But you basically have built an entire life up that makes it complicated, and people are set in their ways. Like, are there any other
yeah.
times that you've experienced, like, outside of just, like, the stuff that you're like, okay, how do we, like, budge and meet each other because we're both kind of in our own mindsets?
Well, I mean, for me, you know, one of the things that always complicated a relationship goes back to my family.
Yeah.
You know, Asian families are really, you know,
tough.
They're traditional. There's a lot of expectation and there's a lot of pressure. And so, again, growing up with those expectations of, you know, my parents, they, of course, thought I was going to marry a Korean-American doctor, right? And so with that kind of really narrow definition of what their expectation was, it made me feel bad when I wasn't meeting somebody like that. And so I would have to keep some of my relationships secret. Some boyfriends, they never even knew about because I never bothered to share. Because if I failed, then they'd be like, see, you know, I told you, you don't know what you're doing. So that pressure continues in terms of how I kind of feel about how I go about relationships, but also with my family. And so what was really important to me was that whoever I end up with, one of the things that had to merge well is my family because they're super important to me. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people who says, oh, fuck it. I don't care what my family thinks. I do. I really do.
Yeah.
So the fact that my mom and my brother and my other relatives really like this guy and have embraced him, it's so meaningful to me that that merging, that was one of the biggest priorities for me, even at 57.
Yeah.
It matters. I mean, we just went to a memorial service for one of my uncles who passed away, and all of my relatives were there. He came with me. The ones who had never met him before, they met him. The other ones that already knew him, they love him. And he respects my culture, he respects my background.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really important to me.
How long have you two been together from like when you met to now?
Just over 2.5 years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
When was it then that you felt like, okay, I want this to be at that next level? I want to start doing the milestones of introducing to my family and to get to the place of I want to be married.
Yeah.
How did that play out for you?
I think, like I said, it was a 6-month mark when I put together that PowerPoint presentation for my mom. And so that's when the cat was let out
of
the
egg. That was your DTR. That was.
Yeah.
With your mom.
That was probably a milestone. Because I did that, that was actually a serious milestone. Because if my family now knows, then I really wanted to grow this relationship and hopefully make it work.
Yeah.
Now, again, I wasn't putting pressure on myself like I've done in the past, but that meant something to me. He was being integrated into my family and then friends and all of that. So I think it was a slow burn for me. You know, sure, I had in the back of my head, wow, if this is the guy for me, then yeah, the eventual next step for me would be some sort of more serious commitment. But he had some bumps along the way because of how he felt about marriage or engagement and how I felt about it.
Yeah.
So we did have to work through that a few times.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just one conversation.
Right.
We had several conversations about this.
Oh, yeah. Julie and I know that all too well. Rinse and repeat.
Yeah. Rinse and repeat. Yeah.
Can you recall like one of the harder conversations that you had on the topic?
Look, it was a delicate dance because I had to be sympathetic because of what his past experience was. His marriage broke up because she fell in love with somebody else, kind of came out of left field. So it's not like his marriage was disintegrating and he wanted out, right?
Right.
So I knew that I had to be sensitive to that. But at the same time, I had to also say to myself, don't put your feelings aside.
Right. You got to honor your needs.
For sure.
Exactly. I knew I had to honor my needs and be honest about that. I think a lot of people in relationships, they have these deep-seated feelings and they don't express them. They don't communicate them until it gets to the point, the boiling point, right? And it's just like you blow up.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to do that. And believe me, there were a couple of times when I thought I was going to, and I would have to say, we got to talk, or he would sense it. And thank God he's Swiss. So he has a very calm demeanor, which is an advantage. So he stays very calm. We would be able to approach it and open up and talk about it before it got so heated. I know that there have been moments where it was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel myself retreating because that was my MO in the past.
Yep.
I would retreat.
Yeah.
I would put on the armor and I'd be like, nope, I'm not going to talk about it. But this is different. It's different and it totally works, you guys. I mean, I wish more people would do this. And it took me a long time. It took me 50 fucking plus years to figure it out. But it also took the right person.
I'm like nodding because I have gone through the exact same thing in the last 6 months to a year. Like it's been the same conversations. And I know for me, a big part of it was that it brought up my own shit. Like I, you know, in therapy with a couples therapist, my partner would say something, I would take it and it would activate like a worthiness wound and a validation aspect of my own stuff. And the therapist is like, I'm not actually hearing what you're hearing. So that showed me there's so much of our deep rooted stuff that comes up in relationships, like with all of this.
Yep.
Did you have any of those experiences?
You know what? I just thought of something that he had a revelation during one of our moments, but this was fascinating to me because, Julie, you're right. A lot of stuff from your past and your childhood, mm-hmm. all this stuff starts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at one point, he got very upset that my mom had told me she didn't want to stay overnight at my house if he was here.
Oh.
Meaning if he was going to be spending the night, right? And because she, again, she's very traditional, right?
Oh.
And I respect that. It's fine. It's fine. Because we were not engaged.
Yep.
We're not married. And so she, again, she's a traditional Christian Korean woman. Okay. So let me just put that out there.
Yeah.
So I told him that and it triggered something very bad for him. And he got very angry and he was like, I'm being rejected. Your mother is rejecting me, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm like, no. I go, it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
It could be any man. Yeah. It could be any male. Yeah. She will not accept it because that's how she is. But he thought it was about him.
Yep.
Right.
Been there.
And I finally said, where's this coming from? And he said, I think this is coming from childhood rejection.
Oh, for sure.
Stuff was coming up from his past and his own family and all this stuff. It was transference. You know, he was feeling rejected because of what was happening through my mom, but he was connecting it to something from his past. So that was an interesting moment that I learned something new about him.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. That
triggered something from his past. Yeah.
And what was yours?
Yeah, for me, I think there are moments when I still wonder if this is something that I can maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I'm 57 and I've never been engaged and I've never been married. I don't have kids. And so I sometimes question, am I capable of this? Like, am I not wired to stay in a relationship or make a long-term commitment? And so I know all of that stuff comes from my childhood too. Not because of my parents. Clearly, they stayed together. But I think it comes from the idea of perfectionism that was ingrained in me.
Yeah.
And that if it's not perfect, then I better step away or I'm going to disconnect from it because it's not going to be perfect. So I've had to train myself not to have that kind of expectation.
Yeah.
But that almost contradicts what you want, which is you wanted marriage. But this feeling of, can I even maintain this? But I still want it.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Like you've got
but
both.
Then when someone's not giving it to you too, I can see
you're like,
how
I wanted more.
Activated completely. Right. You're like, now it's just confirming that belief.
Right.
May, did you ever have at any point think, if he loved me enough, he would want to just marry me? Is that simple?
Yes, of course.
Why can't it be just that simple?
No. I'd be like, he's telling me that you're the one.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, absolutely, we're going to be together forever. I have no doubt about it. He said that multiple times. I have no doubt that we're going to be together forever. So what's the problem? I mean, in his mind, it was just like, well, what's the problem? There's no question. You know, you should know that I'm committed to you.
Yeah.
And so, yes, logically, you know, that makes sense to him, of course. And, you know, overall, sure, that makes sense. But still, there is that part of you that still wants that symbolic commitment, that declaration to the rest of the world. And again, it has nothing to do with people like celebrating with us or congratulating us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when you make a public declaration of any kind, you are accountable to that, right?
Mm.
That means you have to stick with it. I mean, at least I'm a woman of my word.
Yeah.
And the word to me is very valuable. So, you know, if you say it, you better mean it.
Yeah.
And so when I see the world that we live in now where nobody's accountable anymore, you know, you can say one thing and do another. You can lie through your teeth and all of that. You can double down on bullshit. That's the world we live in now. But to me, that's a core value. I'm a woman of my word. I like commitment. I like making promises and keeping them. So I think that's why it means so much.
100%.
And there's just I want to highlight this, though. Remember, he's the one that said, I love you first to you a little early on. And you were like, whoa.
Yeah.
Imagine if he was 3 months in, was like, let's get married. You probably would be like, whoa, where's this coming from? I don't know if that's what I want. Isn't that so interesting? In a relationship, we're always, someone's always a few steps ahead and the other one's just trying to catch up.
Yes.
Only if they're willing to catch up, or then they just kind of disappear. So it's interesting that this happens in every relationship, every stage in life. What advice would you give to anyone who is struggling in dating right now, thinking, I'm just not going to find my person?
I mean, look, it's so cliche, right, to say because of the situation that I'm in, but I have to say, you never know. It's just,
you never know.
But again, don't give up if you still want it.
Yeah.
Yep. And sometimes when you don't want it, but don't be negative about it. Don't be like, fucking hate, man. I hate women. You know, I'm never going to fucking date again. You know, don't put that bad energy out there.
That's what you'll get back.
Right?
Yep.
Don't make it a negative thing. Right. And I did that for a little while too. Very negative. So, and that didn't help my cause whatsoever. So once I felt a release almost of any kind of pressure, and I just opened myself up to the universe, I think it was one of those things. It's like, I wasn't like searching and like desperate, right? Because that doesn't work either. I think if you just open yourself up and say, you know what? I would love to meet somebody, but if I don't, that's fine. It's great because I love my life. But if I meet somebody, that's wonderful. But just approach it in that manner and then be focused if you need to be, right? I've had girlfriends now because of my story, and maybe I'll have more people now, you know, reach out, but they're like saying, God, May, you know, can you help me write my profile? Or like, what did you do? You know, how did you do this? Because we still live in a world where we love happy endings.
Yeah.
You know, we still get caught up in the fairy tales. Yeah. Mine is a really unusual story. It's an unusual tale. And, you know, sure, you can call it a happy ending, but it's continuous, right?
No, it's a beginning.
Let's not sugarcoat. Like we said before, it's a work in progress, right? Just because I met this great guy and we're engaged, it doesn't mean the work stops. We're still going to have stuff we need to talk about and we need to deal with. But it's that communication.
Yes.
That is the one thing that is so different in this relationship for me.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think like this has been such an incredible conversation. I feel like so much of this is resonating with UA and I, and probably many of our listeners out there that, you know, I think the biggest thing that I've taken away from this conversation, just life experience, it's we think that like the end of a relationship is the DTR and defining it and meeting that person, but it's really just the beginning. And I love what you said about it's in progress, because that is the truth, is there's going to be ups and downs. It's not always smooth sailing. I feel like we don't talk about this ever, that relationships are challenging this way. Like we talk about dating being hard and why is it so difficult to meet anyone, but we don't actually ever talk about the struggles of two people just coming together.
Yeah.
I feel like when I was in the thick of going through this, like I heard from so many friends that are happily married now that they struggle with the same thing.
Totally.
Yet no one talked about it in the moment because it's like almost like you want to preserve your relationship and not share the struggles. It's kind of what you were saying earlier of like this feeling of perfection that you want to make everyone feel like you have this perfect relationship, but that's just not realistic. Or if it is, you're just completely suppressing your needs is what I've netted out to. And I agree with you. It's all about communication. I really think that's the only way you can evaluate if the partner is going to be good for the long haul. Like we don't know what's going to happen in 5 years, 10 years or whatever.
Yep.
All we know is how can we work through things with someone and can we get to the other side and come to a place that we're both happy, we're both stating our needs, we're both getting our needs met. That's really the only measure we can have to predict the future. So I cannot agree with you more that that's the sign of a good, healthy relationship.
And also, you know, it really is about your continual growth too and self-awareness.
Yes.
I see a lot of people at my age even completely unaware of themselves.
Yep.
Lacking complete self-awareness. And so I think we can't live so blindly and then think we hit, you know, a maturity date and it's like, oh, well, I'm done.
Nope.
And so I'm good. I don't need to reflect. I don't need to learn anything more about myself. And that's where the rigidity is so bad, right? Where people really don't want to like even consider a different perspective or a different way of going about
right.
you know, life.
And there is no better mirror than a relationship. All your shit gets reflected back to you.
Exactly.
The word is evolution. We keep evolving our relationships. And the only way to do that is through conflict. Mm-hmm. Without conflict, if everything feels hunky-dory,
you don't grow.
The relationship stays stagnant because it means that you're not addressing the points of contention.
Correct.
So it is so important to find a partner who's willing to do conflict with you and who's willing to not give up on the relationship.
Right.
I had a very emotional conversation with my parents last night after two glasses of wine, and they said, what makes this partner different than all your other boyfriends? I said, he is the first and only one who has not given up on us.
Yeah.
He's the first and only one who's willing to keep trying. And even though it's hard, it's so worth it because I found someone who's willing to work on this with me. I can't guarantee you that we'll keep this forever, that he'll keep wanting to work on this or I will keep working on this. But in this moment in time, I can say that. And I can say that that is the most important quality of a partner, especially when you are at a place where you're happy with your life. Mm-hmm. You're happy, single. You are so fulfilled. You are not looking for someone to complete you or to make you happy.
Exactly.
That's when the only quality that matters is finding a partner who's willing to work on it with you. And I love that you both started the relationships as these very defined identities. He's like, I've been married. I'm not going to get married again. You're like, I've never been married and I am open to it. And, you know, just very strong identities. And then now you're merging the two identities where both of you, it's not even sacrifice, is that you've just kind of melted into each other. And now you have this new identity that you're moving forward with. So this is not the end of this chapter. It's the beginning of another chapter. You also have so much else going on, May, that it just shows that life just keeps evolving no matter what stage in life you're in.
Totally.
It does. And that's the message. It's like, you know, don't think like you have some sort of expiration date.
Yeah.
Right.
Because my life is busier and much more interesting than, you know, in my 40s. Seriously, I thought my life was great in my 30s and 40s. Are you kidding? I was flying high and living all over the world. But it's incredible how the arc is still going up.
Yes.
Because I am embracing the fact that, yeah, I'm not done.
It's such an important message, though, that life doesn't need to stop because you hit a certain age. Like, I think that is such a misconception. And
for sure. Just,
it's really toxic, actually. That's even a belief system that our society holds.
Oh,
so I'm really
completely.
Yeah. Like, whether it's life, love, whatever it is, aspect of your life, career, love, whatever it is, it's hopeful to know that it never, like, you're just evolving. That's the theme. For sure.
Yeah. There's no such thing as too late.
Yeah.
Right. Anything can happen around the corner. Anything can happen. And we're here for all that magic. Well, congratulations to you, May, on starting this new chapter and your identity, evolving your life. If people want to get to know you better, because you know that you've also evolved your own show, the May Lee Show is now Shoes Off Inside. Tell us where people can find you.
Yeah. So Shoes Off Inside with MKT and then Kelly Hu and Tamlin Tamita. Mm. They're my co-hosts. And so if you guys are familiar with Hollywood Trailblazers.
Yeah.
Those two are definitely two trailblazers. And that show is on YouTube and then, of course, on all podcast platforms. So we have a lot of fun on that show. And we're all women in our 50s.
Amazing. Mm-hmm.
Who want to, again, break the stereotype that women are done and, you know, you just put us on the shelf and we go away. Clearly not.
Especially here to stay.
Yeah. Especially with Asian women, I think there's a lot of stigma there too of trying to stay really super youthful and all that. But all three of us are showing our grays too, our gray hair.
Mm-hmm.
We're really trying to redefine what it is to be older, badass women.
So fantastic.
I think that's all women. I mean, it's definitely Asian women, but it's probably resonating with every woman out there.
I think so. I think we're reclaiming our space, and we're not letting, you know, these old traditional rules and, you know, stereotypes take over. Let's keep doing our thing.
Let's keep
you guys too,
doing
for sure.
Our thing. We're doing it. We're doing our thing. And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye.